Have you ever heard of social prescribing? It's a recent trend in healthcare in which practitioners are recommending non-pharmaceutical treatments for their patients, including things like volunteering, exercising outdoors, and joining book clubs. The idea is that a strong sense of meaning and connection can be a powerful replacement for or supplement to drug therapy for a variety of ailments. Journalist Julia Hotz writes about this approach in the new book, The Connection Cure: The Prescriptive Power of Movement, Nature, Art, Service, and Belonging. Julia has written for The New York Times, Wired, Scientific American, The Boston Globe, Time, and other outlets. Here she is to share five of her big ideas.
Hi, I'm Julia Hotz. I'm a solutions journalist and author of The Connection Cure: The Prescriptive Power of Movement, Nature, Art, Service, and Belonging. This book is one of the first to dig into the science and stories of a big new idea called social prescribing. And don't worry, introverts, social prescribing is not the forced friendship, small talk hellscape it sounds like. Instead, social prescribing is a practice through which health workers literally prescribe non-medical community resources and activities the same way they prescribe pills and therapies. Now happening in 30 countries around the world, social prescribing is forever changing how we understand health, healthcare, and our own wellness. Through these five insights, I'll explain why, and I'll try to help you remember how connections can often be the best medicine. Insight number one, social prescribing helps us rethink sickness, less as fixed disorders in the body and more as reactions to a stressful environment. Social prescribing is a big new idea, but it's rooted in a big old idea. The idea that our environment influences our health, for worse and for better. Ancient philosophers, indigenous thinkers, holistic medical experts, and positive psychologists have been independently preaching this same idea for thousands of years. And large-scale population studies tell us it's true. Up to 80% of our health is socially determined by factors like where we live, with whom we live, and how we live. To be healthy, we need basic resources: food, cash, a safe home, a stable job. But we also need sources of joy, meaning, and relationships. Is there someone we can call at 3 a.m. in a crisis? Do we have a reason to wake up in the morning? Do we have outlets to cope with the sadness, anger, and fear that come with being human? The data tells us having sources of well-being, a sense of purpose, and meaningful relationships can significantly influence our health and longevity. But the opposite is also true. If our environments don't meet these psychological needs, then we're more likely to get sick. And since we're experiencing overlapping epidemics of depression, anxiety, ADHD, addiction, and lifestyle illnesses, there's reason to believe they're related and that our environments are part of the problem. The earliest version of our DSM acknowledged this relationship. More than depression, anxiety, or attention deficit disorders, you had depressive, anxious, and hyperkinetic reactions. Your sickness was seen less as a fixed set of symptoms ruled by biological factors in a body, and more as a response to all kinds of biopsychosocial stressors in an environment. But just as some environments can make us feel sick, other environments can help us feel better. Insight number two, social prescribing helps us rethink treatment, guided less by what's the matter with you and more by what matters to you. Think back to your very first doctor's visit. You probably had some mild bacterial infection, like strep throat. Chances are your doc ran a test, gave you a diagnosis, and prescribed you antibiotics. This sort of diagnose and treat method works for some sicknesses sometimes. It's why we don't have epidemics of strep throat. But because we do have epidemics of lifestyle and mental illnesses, we need to think differently about how we diagnose and treat them. It's true, medication and therapy can help us cope with some of the symptoms sometimes. But until we also address the environment that contributed to these illnesses, we stand little chance at treating them long-term, systemically. As the famed British epidemiologist Michael Marmot puts it, why treat people and send them back to the conditions that made them sick? So, until we improve those living conditions across the board, here's what health workers and patients can do in the meantime. Instead of just focusing on the symptoms that make us feel sick, which can actually cause us to ruminate and feel worse, we should focus on the environments that make us feel well. This is what social prescribing does. Instead of asking, what's the matter with you, health workers ask their patients, what matters to you? Then they try to understand, what makes you light up? What absorbs your attention? What did you love in your childhood but haven't had a chance to do since? Based on those answers, health workers prescribe their patients a local community activity. These social prescriptions help us feel better, not only because they're reconnecting us with something that matters to us, but also because that activity typically reconnects us to movement, nature, art, service, belonging, five of the core ingredients we evolved to seek and need to thrive. Insight number three, social prescriptions for movement, nature, art, service, and belonging can improve our health. Imagine a day in the life as a hunter-gatherer. To meet your basic needs for food, water, and shelter, you had to move your body and pay attention to nature. To meet your psychological needs for protection and resilience, you probably coped by telling stories, helping your neighbors, and organizing community rituals. Today, thank goodness, living is much easier. But since our survival no longer requires us to move our bodies, spend time in nature, create art, serve our neighbors, and find belonging, most of us miss out on the health benefits those activities can bring. Social prescribing can change that, right down to the chemical level. Moving our bodies can increase our production of endorphins, serotonin, and dopamine, chemicals linked with improved energy and mood. The same benefits hold for spending time in nature, which can also increase our production of the immune-boosting natural killer cells and reduce our production of the stress hormone cortisol. Creating and consuming art can reduce cortisol too, and multiple studies find that volunteering and having close social relationships can increase our longevity, the mother of all health gains. And so, when health workers prescribe activities involving movement, nature, art, service, and belonging, they're prescribing real, science-backed medicine, the effects of which are sometimes comparable to pharmaceutical medicine. People can and have healed from the depths of their illnesses from social prescriptions, because beyond just reducing symptoms of their illness, social prescriptions can also help people find a more sustainable source of wellness. Insight number four, social prescriptions can improve health care. Just as patients are dealing with depression, anxiety, and stress, so are their health workers, especially post-COVID. Part of that comes from the burnout and pressures in the field. To put it mildly, there are not enough doctors, not enough therapists, not enough hospital beds, not enough money, and not enough time to meet demand. But part of the problem is the way patients are coming to medical professionals with non-medical issues. In the UK, one in five doctor's appointments are made for purely social reasons. Globally, 7 of the 10 leading causes of death are from non-communicable lifestyle-related diseases. And so, social prescriptions help health workers treat their patients' underlying non-medical issues with non-medical care. One model involves hiring link workers, a role that acts as a liaison between the doctor, the patient, and the local community. Instead of rushing the conversation and focusing just on symptoms, the link worker can spend time getting to know a patient, understanding what matters to them and offering a local social prescription tailored to their needs and interests. The data shows social prescribing models, particularly in the UK, can reduce hospitalizations, reduce emergency room visits, reduce doctor's appointments, and save money in the long term. Anecdotally, it can also improve doctors' morale. And all of this reduces pressure on healthcare. This is why all kinds of healthcare systems all around the world, from Singapore to Portugal, from Canada to the Netherlands, to, yes, even pockets of the US, are introducing their own models of social prescribing. Insight number 5. Social prescriptions are a gateway drug to help all of us get well. We know now that our modern living conditions and environments are making lots of people sick. But even if we don't develop a disorder, most of us haven't been feeling well, especially since the pandemic. The data finds more of us feel stressed, languishing, pessimistic about the future, and lonely. This, too, is where social prescriptions can help. And I would know. To help cope with my own bouts of sadness, distraction, worries, frustrations, and loneliness, I prescribed myself movement, nature, art, service, and belonging. And just as they help patients, they help me too. An early morning running group helped me get over a breakup and feel less stuck. A birdwatching club helped me deal with my frazzled, 50 tabs open focus issues and restore my attention. A slow-looking museum tour helped me reframe my anxieties about the future and recognize the beauty in my present. A day spent volunteering at the community garden helped me stop feeling angry and start feeling lighter. And a group brokering deep conversation among strangers helped me confront my fear of loneliness and reminded me of the ways all of us belong to the ups and downs of the human experience. I'm sure the neurochemicals were at play, but really what social prescriptions did for me and what I believe they can do for you is offered some perspective. They helped me see my suffering as temporary and my moods as passing. They helped me become more present and reminded me of what really matters.
Thank you, Julia. That was Julia Hotz with 5 big ideas from The Connection Cure, the prescriptive power of movement, nature, art, service, and belonging. Also check out our book bite for Tough Broad, from boogie boarding to wing walking, how outdoor adventure improves our lives as we age, by Caroline Paul. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.